And for all the kiddos, you are welcome to head downstairs. Are there any objections if I start preaching barefoot? Sounds good to me. Yeah, maybe. I won't subject you to my feet, but we are in holy ground of that image. That's really good. When it comes to three-card Monty, the classic street hustle slash magic trick slash sleight of hand con, there's only one rule, one thing you gotta know. As soon as you play three-card Monty, you've lost three-card Monty, all right? And it goes something like this. You're walking down a bustling city street. You see a crowd gathered around, and your curiosity is piqued. And so you go over, elbow your way through a bit to get eyes on the action, and you see a guy there. He's got three cards, two jokers and a queen. Now, the queen is the money card. It's the one you're wanting. If you put money down on the queen and you get it right, you double your profit. If you don't, if you get a joker instead, you lose what you put down. And that's the game. That's three-card Monty. So the guy shows you the queen, places her face down, and then he starts to shuffle and shift the three cards from one position to another. Now, all you got to do is keep your eyes on the queen. And you've got her. The cards stop. The guy gives an inquiring look to the lady next to you, and she places $10 in front of the queen. Same card as you picked in your mind. And he turns it over, and what do you know? It's the queen. The lady squeals with delight. She's just doubled her money. So the card dealer gives her $10, and he does it again. And this time, the lady places her $20 down. She hits the queen again, doubles her money, and the cycle goes on a couple more times, just like this. The dealer will show his card. You follow the queen. The lady places all she has on that same card that you picked in your mind, and each time she doubles her money. Now, the lady has done quite well for herself, and she exclaims, "Hey, I'm happy." And so she walks away with her winnings, and when the dealer asks, "All right, who's next?" Your eyes gleam with confidence at the prospect of making some easy cash. You've picked the queen every time, so you know it's a sure thing. He shuffles the cards. Your eyes never leave the queen, so when he stops, you slap $50 down without even thinking about it. Except this time, when the dealer flips the card over, it's not the queen, it's the joker. And before you can utter a protest, he grabs your money, picks up his act, and moves to the next corner to sucker somebody else. He and the lady, of course, she's an important part of all this. And see, you just broke the one rule of three-card Monty. You played three-card Monty. Had you known this was going to be a thief, had it been obvious, you probably wouldn't have handed over your money. But that's the thing about thieves. They don't make it obvious that they're stealing from you. More often than not, they make it pretty convincing for you to hand over what's precious to you until one day you stop and look around and realize that right under your nose, you've been swindled. Jesus is going to tell us today that this is what thieves do. They come to steal and kill and destroy. But he also offers himself as an alternative to the thief with his third I am statement in John's gospel. Let's hear what he has to say. Stand, if you will, for the reading of God's word from John 10. Very truly, I tell you, anyone who does not enter the sheepfold by the gate, but climbs in by another way, is a thief and a bandit. The one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep hear his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And when he has brought out all his own, he goes ahead of him, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. They will not follow a stranger, but they will run from him because they do not know the voice of strangers. Now, Jesus used this figure of speech with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. So again, Jesus said to them, "Very truly I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and bandits, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters by me will be saved, and they'll come and go and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. You may be seated. Now, out of all the things Jesus says about himself, this one is, well, let's just say it's not his most poetic, right? I am the gate. I don't know. It doesn't quite have the same pop and pizzazz as Bread of Life or the luminous luster of Light of the World. I mean, I've known a few gates in my life. Not many have made a lasting impression on me. In fact, most are fairly unremarkable. And had you asked me before what the opposite of a thief was, I don't think a gate is the first thing that would come to my mind. But dig a little deeper into the sheepfold image that Jesus is referencing throughout this discourse, and this whole "I am the gate" saying is actually quite remarkable. Picture it. A sheepfold in ancient Israel in the time of Jesus was an enclosure most often made of stacked stones, shoulder high, all the way around. And sheep would come in to this enclosure at night and be protected from any predators looking for a midnight snack. As an extra deterrent, all across the top of the enclosure were briars, like ancient barbed wire, used to keep any unwanted man or beast from climbing over the top of the stones. And so it was a pretty nice setup for the sheep. And the way the sheep would go in and out of this enclosure was through a gap in the stones, you know, a few feet wide or so. It was the only opening. It was the TSA of the enclosure. And then there was the gate. Now, I don't know what comes to your mind when you imagine it. Maybe something like this picture here. A wooden slatted contraption, or maybe some metal pipes lashed together. But that's not what the people of Jesus' day used as material for their gate. You know what it was? Have you heard this image before? They used themselves. It was the shepherd who would lay across the entrance. He was a living gate, so that they would know if man or beast attempted to come in, or if any sheep attempted to go out. Which means that the purpose of the gate was twofold. It was for protection and also freedom. And it's important when we're thinking of Jesus being the gate to keep those two purposes in mind. Because I've often heard this text used as a way to keep people away from God. You know, the argument goes, if Jesus is the gate, he must be talking about exclusion here. He's keeping people out. He may as well have one of those signs posted, like I see in people's yards, with a picture of a gun and "We don't call 911. Sometimes this text gets wielded in such a way to make people actually feel unwelcome with God. But if you remember last week's story about the Pharisees who kicked the former blind man out of the sanctuary because they could not accept his testimony about Jesus, then you'll Remember that this whole notion of exclusion, that was their attitude. They had exclusive claims on God and no shame in acting as the gates to keep people in and out. But the purpose of Jesus being the gate is not to keep other sheep out. In fact, Jesus is going to say in our text for the next time I'm up here, in the Good Shepherd Discourse, in verse 16, I have other sheep that do not belong to this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice, so that there will be one flock and one shepherd. See, it's not other people in general who Jesus is trying to keep out. Rather, the gate is there to guard against all that threatens the well-being of the sheep, but also to bring the sheep into the abundant nourishment of the pastures when it's safe to do so. Safety and security, freedom and life, that's what gates are for. More than that, though, the point of Jesus claiming that this gate image is saying something true about himself is the contrast that he's making. See, he is both the shepherd and the gate, the one who literally puts his life on the line for the sheep. Now, for those of us who claim Jesus as Lord, he is the one who stands in the gap between us and all the forces that wish us harm. He is the one who knows where the green pastures are, and he is the one who leads us out into them. And his dealings with us are open and clear and honest. We know his intentions for us. He is deeply invested in our well-being and in our flourishing. He cares about us. He knows our names. He wishes our good. We know his motivation is love, and his desire is our life. And that stands in direct contrast to those who don't. Because there are those who have other intentions for the sheep, whose way is murky and concealed, and who come to the sheep by illegitimate means. These are thieves and bandits, Jesus says, and they stand in opposition to the shepherd, to the gate. Now, the thieves in Jesus' day, the ones he's referring to here, were the many unfaithful political and religious leaders of Israel, spanning all throughout Israel's history, and even up to the present day that Jesus is speaking. Their concern was only for themselves at the expense of the common person. They had influence and authority, but used it to harm others or to live comfortably off of another's hardship. And what Jesus saw in his day were the Pharisees and Sadducees who would lay the heavy burden of God's law on people's lives and tell them that in order to be right with God, they had to do more and work harder and be better. Sadly, Israel had many such leaders, and Jesus is calling them out. But I don't think it would be a misapplication for us to call out the things in our day that slink over the walls in order to steal us away from the shelter of Jesus' fold. Sure, these can also be political or religious leaders, such as they were in Jesus' time. And when they are, we ought to be discerning, and we ought to be wary. But I suspect that more often than not, the thieves of our lives are good things that pose as ultimate things. They are the longings of our hearts that whisper to us in the night, follow me, devote yourself to me, trust in me. Things like success, which tells us that if we only get into that school and do what it takes to make the promotion and work overtime and earn the money, then we'll be happy. Forget that it tears us apart from our family. In the end, it will be worth it. Earn success. Get the house, get the cars, get the shiny toys. Then we'll have the good life. What about comfort? Life is hard, this voice tells us, and we can't argue with it. So just binge another series and zone out for a bit. Distract ourselves with that little device in our pockets, and life won't be so messy and complicated. We can skip the drama of having to be present with real people, and then we'll know peace. Then we'll have the good life. Or maybe for you it's control. Be anxious about all the what ifs, all the things that can go wrong, and manipulate the situation so that you're the one with the authority and you don't have to risk things not going the way that you want them to go. Finagle all the parts and pieces just how you like it, and then you'll have the good life. We recognize these voices, don't we? These and others like them, they all promise two things. The first is that they have the secret, the answer to what we're missing, and the second is that they have our best interest in mind. But do they really? Do those who peddle in get-rich-quick schemes and five steps to a better life really care all that much about us? Would they care about us if we didn't hand them our money? Would any of them put their lives on the line for us like Jesus does? Actually, it's just the opposite, isn't it? In those schemes, we assume the risk. Our lives are the ones on the line. And whether we know it or not, we're playing three card Monte. Tricked into believing that if we sacrifice more and try harder and worry longer and invest better and give more, then we will win. And little do we realize until we're standing there dumbfounded at a life that has passed us by that we've lost everything because we were playing the wrong game. When it comes to thieves and bandits, it cost us our lives, not theirs. And maybe that's true for us, or maybe it ought to be. Where Jesus stands in the gap and lays down his life for us so that we might know his protection and receive his abundance. All these other voices, they want to seduce us to follow them. None of them care for us like that. Thieves and robbers, if we let them in, they'll take us for all we're worth. And they always want more, and it's never enough. You'll never hear from the thieves in your life that you can rest now, that you can be at peace, that you're okay, that you don't have to strive and sacrifice. But it's not that with Jesus. And if we're tired of playing the hollow game of success or control or consumption or lust or whatever it is, then Jesus calls out to you from his spot as the gate, come in and know my rest. If we're beat up from fighting spiritual battles and weary from constant attack, Jesus, the living, breathing, talking gate, invites you in as you pass by. Hey, I recognize you. Come here. Come find rest. Come know my protection. Come be with me. And I'll fight for you. And if we're wondering if we're at all on God's radar, if he knows or cares, Jesus the gate calls us by name into his flock because we belong with him. So if our lives feel like one big game of three-card Monte, then maybe now's the time to decide to walk away, to stop playing that game, and to trust Jesus as the gate instead. Many of us are about to leave from here and go to our home and watch the Super Bowl. I hope you enjoy it. Eat the nachos, enjoy the wings, snack on the dip, cheer for whomever you're cheering for, and laugh at the commercial. But as we do all of that, let's see it for what it is. Yeah. Because those commercials and all of this spectacle, it's all playing three card Monty with our hearts. They want to convince us that our lives are incomplete. We need what they're selling. That we're not satisfied. There's no way we could be because we have not yet bought what they're offering. But beloved church, thieves come to steal away our peace and kill our contentment and destroy our connection to Christ. Don't play the game. Instead, remember Jesus' words and listen to his voice. For he is the one who stands before you, having laid down his life on your behalf so that you can be both secure and free to know that the goodness of God is already, it's already yours. You already have it in your hands. All you have to do is move the gate. Pray with me. God, our gate to all that is good and true and beautiful, help us to trust in your protection, to receive the abundant life you lead us into, and to turn away from all who would steal, kill, and destroy our lives. This is our earnest prayer in the name of Jesus and the power of your Spirit. Amen.